Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, meeting a senior executive. Here we go. One of the recommendations we've made at least a couple times in manager tools, not career tools, but our manager tools,
right.
is that every manager who has managers below them needs to periodically have what we call a skip meeting.
Or a skip level meeting. Skip level meeting, yeah.
Skip level,
yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Having a skip level. Yeah, in fact, we call it a skip level when really what it is a skip level meeting, a meeting to meet your skip levels, right, or to meet your skips, yeah.
Right. And by skips, we mean, you know, if there's some executive out there, she's not meeting with her directs, the people who work directly for her, but for her directs. And we,
right.
those are skips. And so we call
those are skips because you have to skip a level to get to them.
There you go. And that's all very well and beneficial for the manager, of course, but it can be intimidating to say the least. For
yeah, and speaking of intimidation, you know what we call the double skip level, right? If a skip level meeting is with a direct of your direct, then what is it if you meet with a direct of your director direct? Well, that never happens, so there's no name for it.
No need to come up with a name for it.
yeah, sorry.
So for Career Tools listeners, if they find themselves in that position, what advice can we give them to give a good impression and not embarrass themselves?
Yeah, actually, I think there's two pieces of this here. We you know, people often say, oh, the big boss is coming down, right? My boss's boss. But frankly, this guidance is for meeting any notably senior executive. Now look, if you're an EVP and you're meeting the CEO for the first time, yes, the CEO is a notable senior executive, but since she's your boss, if you're an EVP in my example, we wouldn't consider this to apply. We're talking about meeting somebody two levels or three levels or even four levels higher than you. When I was in the Army, we used to call it echelons above reality.
Right.
Just very, very high. And look, folks, if you think you understand what's going on four levels above you, you probably don't. And don't feel bad. And we're not pointing a finger at you because we didn't either, 30 years ago when we started. But this applies not just to going into a skip level as a skip of your boss's boss, but also meeting somebody more senior, particularly if it's a one-on-one meeting, right? If it's a face-to-face meeting and it's not a, you know, 100 people in the room. But basically the idea is, what can you do to keep yourself from being embarrassed? How can you make a good first impression? And look, it's really easy. Although frankly, you have to think about it a little bit creatively because most of us assume we're in a business meeting. It's business. And so we're just going to be ourselves. We're going to be smart about what we know. We're going to admit what we don't know. We're going to be professional about handling our deliverables and our responsibilities. We're going to contribute ideas and so on. But in fact, when you're meeting with more senior people, there are political ramifications. And it's worthwhile to know some simple things. And so we have four recommendations. Number one, folks, you got to get more information. It's out there. We promise you it's out there, and people don't do it. People think, well, I wouldn't do that with my boss's peer, so why would I do that with my boss's boss's boss? Well, because your boss's boss is really powerful, and you may only get 5 minutes with them. And if the first 5 minutes you get are all that you get, and it's you suddenly realizing, oops, I'm in an interview, you're not going much further, and you're not going to get another chance to make, you know, what's that saying? It's really cheesy, but you never get a second chance to make a good first impression. So the first thing you need to do is get more information. Then, of course, you need to use that information. You need to prepare for the meeting. It's not like other meetings with other individuals, okay? We're going to make some recommendations about put your best foot forward. That's our third point. And the last point, and this is related to the stress when people start realizing they have to prepare for a particular meeting with a particular individual. Our last point is let it go, folks. You're going to do the best you can. And hopefully the more chances you get at this, you'll be better. And when you're 21 and 22 and 23 and 24, just starting your career, you're going to make mistakes in these things, and it's okay. Let it go. Mike and I have done that ourselves. You've told that story several times of walking up to VPs at Mobile Oil and going, let me tell you what I think should be done around here. And your boss later saying to you, you know, you might want to change that behavior. And apparently it turned out okay, right?
It turned out okay. She didn't say it quite that nicely, but
yeah, I mean, it was before I was really a professional, but when I was a cadet, right? The system gave me an enormously bad deal. And when my tactical officer at the academy asked me, what I thought of him. I told him the polite description of what I told him, a commissioned officer in the Air Force. And I know that sounds weird for US pointers out there, but I did have an Air Force tactical officer. I told him a very impolite, a very vulgar translation of go to hell. And, I seem to have survived.
It amazes me to this day. So you must have been pretty bright, frankly, because I know exactly what you said.
When I tell, you're right. You know, when I've told that story to other people, they're stunned. They're stunned that I wasn't just cashiered immediately.
Yeah. So, folks, you can do stupid things and still survive.
Yeah,
so.
And then just let it go. And then you just have to let it go, right? Remember, I've told the story about getting fired, right? I mean, I got fired and I realized within 30 seconds, I'm still me. And, you know, you have to let it go. And you go home and, it's going to be okay. And you discover. And you can't experience that vicariously. You can only experience it firsthand. But once you do, you realize, that's right. It's not as bad as you thought. Right. So that's why our fourth point is let it go.
Yeah. And folks, you don't have to do what we did and be stupid. You could be smart.
Yeah.
So let's talk about it.
One of the great joys of being a human being is we are given the gift of learning from other people's experiences. And one of the great tragedies of being a human is we have an inordinately hard time doing so. So hopefully we'll make this cast compelling.
So there's a couple of mistakes folks make, right? I mean, whether it's a one-line email or, you know, frankly, a passing comment in the hallway.
Yeah,
being asked to go to the office of your boss's boss.
Boss's boss, right? And you just brought up two good points. The idea of one line in an email, right? Or a passing comment. You think nothing of it, right?
Or it feels like being sent to the principal's office, right? You don't have any information. We don't know why we've been asked.
No clue.
Right? We don't know what's going on. So we tend to start filling the void with our own information. And it's awful. You make this mountain into, or this molehill into a mountain, perhaps. And so we can get nervous by filling in information that we don't have, that we could just as easily go out and get.
Okay, but to be fair, though, the opposite, in my opinion, the opposite is even more true. Folks, don't be fooled by an executive saying, I just want to chat with you. I just want to get to know you.
Yeah,
now, look, folks, you may think, well, why do they say that if they don't really mean it? I'll tell you why, frankly. Imagine that you're an executive and you're considering putting one of three or four people on a given team. I'm making this up as an example. This never actually happened to me. And sure. I didn't actually do this very thing. And yeah, I realized that if I let it be known I was looking for people, every single thing I said and did after I built relationships with a lot of people would essentially be scrutinized. And I realized that there was risk. If I telegraphed that I was looking for people for a team that I was forming and then actually spoke to people more than what I would normally do, 30 seconds or a minute in the hallway or whatever, and then didn't choose them, that could be perceived as a negative. What's more, I knew that telling people that, in fact, something was in play would change their behavior around me. Essentially, it's the professional version of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, right? Once you measure it, by definition, you have to change something. So executives have learned that you have to be, particularly senior executives, you have to be somewhat stealthy. Otherwise, you get unusual outcomes. Now, you might say, well, maybe if it was done differently, they wouldn't. Well, okay, yeah, maybe you're right. And the fact is, lots of executives have been doing it for a long time and discovered that people behave in ways that are not helpful to the executive's intent when everything is completely obvious and above board and every single conversation, the full purpose and totality of the conversation is stated on the record in a way that makes it easy for every single subordinate to understand. So by definition, executives have learned, I mean, it's just a function of history. Executives have learned to soft pedal the extent of their involvement.
Right. Yeah, and they might not even be looking to fill a particular project with an individual.
Right, exactly.
They may be a smart executive and know that they have to size up folks, right? They need to know what talent is coming through the ranks and figure out who's high potential and all that. So they're not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. But again, like you said, they've learned that they need to soft pedal it. So it sounds kind of soft.
Yeah. And look, here's the thing. If they are going to spend time with you, even if it's random, if you don't even know, I mean, if you're not told to go to their office, but in fact, you know, you are going to be in their office, don't think for a minute that they're not sizing you up. Executives' primary responsibility is to ensure the future success of the organization. the way they do that, there's the short-term thing, which is they make sure the company gets to next year by making profits. And the long-term thing is they hire and develop the right people and put in place the right systems and processes to ensure that those people can, in fact, achieve what the company needs them to achieve. The most important of those things is hiring the right people. Once those people are hired, and probably they're not involved in every single hiring decision, then it becomes, okay, how do we develop those people? How do you develop people? You get to know them, find out what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then put them in the right places to make sure that their skills are used and those skills that are needed to be developed get a chance to be developed as well. This is not rocket science. This is executive life, executive role and responsibilities 101. I just did it for a group of executives in Chicago recently. But what that means is when you're meeting with a senior executive, particularly if they've told you they want to meet with you, you're absolutely being evaluated. You may not like it. If you don't like it, you're going to be not liking every single senior executive meeting you have, because that's what we do.
Yeah. Now, if you're thinking that you don't have enough information for this particular meeting, this comment in the hallway or this short email, you might be right. But to be fair, most executives feel they probably supplied you with enough information. The problem here is what they've forgotten about is what it's like to be where we are now, right? Where you are. They forget how intimidating they can be. Or they just don't care. But we'll be generous. Right. So they think they've provided you the information. So going back to her for more information probably doesn't make a lot of sense here, right?
Yeah. I also think they really do want to get to know you. They do. And even if they decide you're not right or they're not impressed, they still want to know you and they still want to understand how best to employ you. Now, you want to put your best foot forward, as we'll suggest in a minute, but that doesn't mean that they're purely evaluating you. And so if they tell you, I'm going to evaluate you, they know they're going to get weirdness. I mean, at least that's my experience, right? We know what happens, right? We'll get interviewing behavior, which is weirdness often.
Right. Okay, but don't let that fool you. So they're trying to avoid this interviewing behavior, and you want to be smart enough to know that, in fact, to some extent, you are being interviewed. So you can't go back to the executive and ask for more information about this meeting. So,
but dude, there are other sources, right? I mean, your boss, your peers, that executive's assistant, for example, are all good sources. And look, ask your boss. Ask that executive assistant if they know what the meeting is about and ask for more details, okay? So look, here are some simple questions. If you're a premium content member, these are in the show notes. If you're not, then we encourage you to become a premium content member or take some notes here. Not while you're driving, please. Does the executive meet people at your level regularly, right? Okay, hey, boss, you know, Jane, the VP, wants to meet with me. Does this happen a lot? Does she meet with people? Am I one of 100? I just got an email, right?
Yeah. If it happens all the time, like this is the 100th, you know, time that this executive has met with folks at various levels down the chain, then you can go ask people who've participated before, right?
Right.
If there's 199 people before you, go ask some of them. What happened? What'd she ask?
Yeah, I'm amazed that people are, I've heard about these town halls. I'm on the 5th town hall, but I don't know what's going on with them. What? There have been 3 out of the 5. You're on the 5th one. You don't know what's happening. You don't know the agenda. Well, how would I find out? You call one of your buddies. It was one of the first ones. Oh, I don't know anybody in that department. Well, go make one and find out what the heck the thing was about. Right? Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Sorry. Look, does he or she meet people on your level regularly? If she does, what does she generally want to talk about? What's the scope of it? Now, you may have to ask 2 or 3 or 4 people, 2 or 3 or 4 your bosses or your boss's peers or your peers who, in fact, have been in those meetings. Ask, what's her style in terms of meeting behavior? If you're so inclined and the knowledge would help you, what's her DISC style? Is she a D? Is she as forceful, sort of take no prisoners? Is she a high I? Is she a salesy person and very persuasive and friendly and outgoing? Is she a high S? Is she warm and fuzzy? Is she great team leader and team member and always considering other people? Is she a high C? Is she the analyst, the accountant, the engineer, you know, always right, always correct, and always prepared? And look, something else. Even if you get all those questions answered and you can go back to your boss and say, hey, boss, what does she generally look for when it comes to getting promotable people? I mean, what is she like? What does she want from other people, all things being equal? And I've alluded to it, but let me just make it crystal clear, folks. Our routine exhortation to you at Career Tools to have good relationships with others pays off here. 20 years from now, Career Tools will continue to exist, and we will still be telling you, if you will build your network, everything else gets easier. It's probably the furthest, it's the most leverage you can have. It's the furthest thing out on the teeter-totter. I don't know what the European or South American or African version of a teeter-totter is, what word that is. But if you want to write me and tell me, I'd love to hear it. But, you know, a fulcrum, a lever, what did Archimedes say? Give me a lever and a place to stand and I can move the world. Your relationships with others, your network, are a place that you can put your finger on a really long board and move a great deal, make things a great deal easier for you. The shorter your network, the closer you're standing to the fulcrum, and the more effort you have to put personally into it to make a difference.
Yeah, I don't think Archimedes was talking about a teeter-totter, by the way, but hey, whatever.
Isn't that what, I mean, that's the picture I have in my mind, literally. When I think of Archimedes' principle, I think of Archimedes standing at the end of what looks like a teeter-totter, right? A long board with a little fulcrum in the middle of it, and he's got his finger on it, and he says, you know, give me a place to stand, and I can move the world. Am I making that up? Is that the wrong?
Hey,
or Zeus, are you correcting the fact that the Greeks did not call them teeter-totters?
hey, Zeus, meet me over by the teeter-totter. So I can move the world with the teeter-totter. Okay. All right.
Zeus didn't need Archimedes to move his world, but that's okay.
I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you gathered information, right? So now you can do what most folks don't do when going to these senior executive meetings is prepare.
Yeah.
You know about your organization's and your boss's mission, and now you can work out what you need to do to prepare.
Yeah. There's a corollary here. I alluded to the whole interviewing weirdness thing earlier, but you're going to be interviewed. It's not going to be a straight interview because they're not going to tell you it's a straight interview. And nevertheless, you're meeting with somebody who has power over things you potentially want, and they're going to be evaluating your skills and abilities and interpersonal skills and your abilities in general. It may not be called an interview. You may not be interviewing for a particular job with a job offer at the end of it, but nevertheless, and maybe not in tone and tenor, but in theory, it's an interview. And what do we talk about during the interview series all the time? Preparation, right? Know your background, know what you've been good at, know what those things prove about you, be able to pick the right things to prove the right things for the right person, you know, be able to be conversant in the affairs of the day and so on. Yeah. So look, let's be simple, right? First thing you can expect to happen, folks, be prepared for the conversation to begin with some general questions about the role, your department, your organization, and your manager. Now, doesn't that sound very similar to a line that might sound like, be prepared for the conversation to begin with some normal chit-chat about stuff that you both already know, like Wall Street Journal and the weather and sports and maybe, if somebody's feeling frisky, the politics of the day.
All right, but why would he ask me about that kind of stuff if he already knows the answers? I mean, he certainly knows what the role of my department is and probably who my manager is and things about the organization. So why in the world would he possibly ask me about that?
Well, first of all, to relax you a little bit, to give you some softball questions to make sure that you're not seized up with nerves. You know, but if he asks, how are you enjoying working here? What's it like working for your boss or whatever?
You might want to have a prepared question of that instead of just blurting out.
Yeah, prepared answer, yeah.
Jim, I haven't seen him awake in years.
Yeah, he's never here. I don't really feel like he's my boss, frankly.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Oh, that's right. You know, I can't imagine a situation where a manager finding that a statement like that out later, a statement like, well, I know he's my boss, but I never see him. He's never here. I can't imagine a manager more all at once in one moment wanting to have done in the past phone one-on-ones in that very moment there. But look, the executive wants to relax you a little bit. They want to learn some things. They certainly, if in fact there's a truth that would surprise them in that little chit chat, they'd want to know it, right? And they're essentially validating who you are. So there maybe have been changes, right? You may have a new boss. There could be all kinds of reasons, and you need to be prepared for the normal chit chat. You know, what's your background? That sort of stuff.
Yeah, and the point here is that, like, these questions are coming. We're telling you, they're coming.
Yeah.
So, you know, be smart. Have a prepared answer. Look, you can rehearse your answers to those questions 1,000 times. And when you get in the meeting with the boss's boss, you're going to be nervous. You're going to forget about your memorized questions. They'll be at the back of your mind. And whatever you say, it's not going to come off as rehearsed.
It's not.
Just put that put that
more out rehearsing. How many times have we said that, right? More rehearsing will not make you sound rehearsed.
You won't.
There's
you
simply
won't.
No way. You will sound more prepared than anybody else. You will be more ready than anybody else, but you won't sound more rehearsed.
Yeah. And on the other hand, if you don't rehearse, you're going to say the first thing that comes out of your, into your mind, it's going to come out of your mouth, and you may not like what you just said. So be prepared. These questions are coming. This is real easy. There's no reason to fall down in this quote unquote kind of interview for the simple questions that you know are coming.
Yeah. Look, you're also going to be asked about projects you're working on. So folks, be prepared to give an update on all your projects, especially any high-profile ones. If you think you're working on 10 projects, one of which has exposure across multiple divisions and the other 9 do not, that's the one you're probably going to be asked most questions about.
Oh, yeah. And it's a great opportunity. If there's something red or something that's bad that's going on in the project and your boss has not had a chance to communicate that yet upwards, now's a great opportunity for you to show how smart you are and point that out to your boss's boss. I'm just saying it's just an opportunity.
Is that a little hint at an April Fool's cast for next year or something?
Yeah, maybe yeah. I should have saved it for that.
Mike did not, let me just, full disclosure, folks, Mike did not mean what he just said. Do not throw your boss under the bus in the interest of appearing to be on top of things professionally.
Yeah, folks, okay? That was
don't
my
release anything.
Voice.
Yeah, don't say anything to your boss's boss or her boss or his boss that your boss doesn't know about first. Look, you need some sort of high level red, amber, green status for each project, an idea of the issues and the positives for each project. Okay. It's no more than a 2 minute, even a minute and a half on each one of your projects. This is no different than an update you would prepare for your boss, but you'll probably need to abstract up a level for the executive. She's probably going to be less likely interested in the details. Although, look, that isn't the case. So you should be well versed in your stuff. Don't give a minute long answer and then just act as if nothing else is available to you. You may have to be willing to go into details. And if they're a high C, those of you who know DISC, then you can expect more details. If they have a couple of big, thick folders in front of you and they ask about your projects, they probably know your projects better than you do. But the way you do it is, if you're asked about your projects, give a high level overview first and then ask if they want more detail. And if they do, be prepared to give that also. So look, and separate from your projects, be prepared to give an update on what we would call your top 3 activities and your contribution to your boss's top 3 activities. You know, I'm amazed at people, they say, this is what I'm working on. And executives say, well, how does that fit in with what your boss is doing? And they've never thought about it before. Now, they might say, oh, I think about it all the time. But when they're asked a question, they totally stumble. I argue that if you can't answer a question fairly smoothly, that's a legitimate concern in the sense that I can draw the conclusion you've not thought about that before. You cannot think what you cannot say. It's as simple as that. And so when it comes to being a professional, so be prepared to give an update in your top 3 and relative to your boss's stuff as well. You need to be able to describe your objectives for the year also and whether you're on track to meet them or not. And that's something that, frankly, I'd bet less than 10% of the people who are listening to this cast right now could do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And frankly, I would ding myself also. I'm just, you know, I think this cast will probably come out in December, so it's a little bit easier this year, but you know, if it was January or February, you know, the 10 things I was supposed to work on this year, tough one.
How about career aspirations? To get questions about that?
Yeah. I mean, executives who are thinking about spotting talent will want to know what your career aspirations are. And I got to tell you, it's a tough one. Most of us get distracted by the day-to-day and only think about career aspirations at changeable or change of year moments like holidays, New Year, or annual evaluations. Make time to think about and then prepare a description of your career aspirations. And it can be delivered in a couple of sentences. I mean, you know, if I was a salesman, I said my career aspiration is to become a sales manager, going to sales, and then going to marketing management at Procter & Gamble. If I were, you know, an engineer, if I were in coding, for instance, I'd say my goal is to be developed into management software development. I'd have particular interest in quality assurance. And then long term, I'd like to move into application development, particularly as it relates to internet applications.
Yeah.
And hopefully someday I could potentially have executive
potential. Yeah. Folks, if you're an individual contributor, your manager is unlikely to be the person who's making decisions about moving you, for example, from sales to marketing. It's going to be at least your boss's boss. And if that's an aspiration you have or you hold, and you don't share that with the person who's going to be making those decisions in the future, then shame on you. You've just cut your chances down by at least 50% of getting that.
Yeah. Good. And then also remember, you've got to include a little sort of potpourri category for those things you found out in asking questions about what the executive asks. You know, does he or she meet people regularly? Remember the questions we said, what do they talk? What do they like to talk about? What are their meeting behaviors? What are they looking for? You know, those things that they generally ask about, be prepared to answer those things as well.
Really think?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm just saying.
Okay. Now you mentioned our point three was put your best foot forward. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I don't know. I take it for granted, right? And that's the danger, of course, in situations like this, is I just take it for granted. Well, of course, you're meeting your boss's 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 boss. So are you going to dress up that day?
Okay. So things beyond just preparing your answers to the questions that you know you're going to get or likely to get, but it goes beyond
that. I think some practical and some conversational things you can do. Look, folks, put your best outfit on, right? You don't have to put on an interview suit, but if my work attire were slacks and a dress shirt and I was meeting my boss's boss and it was a one-on-one meeting, I'd wear a suit that day without a tie. Our recommendation is to go at least one level up from what you normally wear. Now, look, if normal in your organization is a suit and tie, we don't want you in a dinner jacket, okay? Okay. But if normal is khakis and a polo shirt, put on dress trousers and a long sleeve dress shirt. And frankly, folks, if khakis and a polo shirt are normal in your organization, may I suggest in the future that you wear more dress trousers, ones that need to be dry cleaned or at least pressed, rather than khakis. And if you're not comfortable getting completely away from polo shirts, this is for the guys, then try 2 days a week with a long sleeve dress shirt. And if you can't stand it at the end of the halfway through those 2 days, roll your sleeves up. I'll tell you what, I've walked into a place and looked around at 30 people and walked right over to the guy who had on gray wool slacks, loafers, and a long sleeve dress shirt. And I was right. That was the manager.
Yeah. And going from, you know, slacks to, or khakis to slacks and from a polo shirt to a long sleeve shirt won't be so obvious that you'll feel out of place with everybody else around the office, right?
Yeah. And for some of you say, you know what? I feel like that's a little elitist, right? We shouldn't have to spend more money on clothes in order to be thought successful. Well, first of all, in order to be thought successful, that's in the mind of somebody else. So you might as well recognize the mind of somebody else is probably going to be driven by different factors than you. Secondly, you don't really have to spend that much more. And third, it matters. People pay attention. People draw conclusions. And if you don't want to play the game, that's completely fine. Just don't expect the spoils associated with the game to come to you since you're not playing. Is it possible to be a brilliant and successful manager, engineer, senior manager, junior executive, executive, senior executive, CEO, while completely not dressing the part? Yes. And you have to be smarter, faster, cooler, more natural, and better all the way around than everybody else. It's not either or, choose one or the other, but it's a simple thing you can do to make a difference. And frankly, it inspires, even though it might get some jeers of derision from some of your buddies, as I heard one political guy once, right? As much as people complain about, for instance, in the U.S., the fact that the president has a driver and Secret Service and so on, not that many people want their next door neighbor making decisions about national security. Right. And not that many people want a guy who's just as dumb as them about politics and corporate culture and so on, making decisions about them for their job.
Yeah.
So put your best outfit on. Okay. Whatever you choose, it needs to be clean and pressed. And frankly, folks, you might think that may not be guidance we would need to give, but you'd be surprised. And by the way, guys, we'll talk about this again in future casts about dressing. And this applies to the ladies as well. Khakis. Generally a bad choice if you care how you look between 3 and 6 in the afternoon. I happen to love khakis and they wrinkle like crazy and look like crap at 4 and 5 in the afternoon. On the other hand, wool slacks tend to snap back a little bit. Wool slacks with a little bit of polyester in them, not 80% polyester, tend to tend to do better. And that's generally why female junior managers and managers and junior executives look better than the male ones who came out of technical backgrounds, and the male managers are still wearing khakis and the ladies are wearing slacks, which has some wool and some polyester in them. And they look good at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the guys look slovenly.
In these meetings, is it okay to take notes in these meetings, by the way?
Yeah. Is it okay to take notes? Holy crap. If somebody senior is talking to you, pay attention. We always joke with people about one-on-one notes, right? And they say, what do I tell my directs if they ask me, are you documenting? You look at them and say, yes, I am documenting, which is a really formal word for taking notes. And I write take notes because what you say is important to me, or B, I'm old, or C, this is a business meeting and I take notes in every business meeting I go to. Take something to write on and something to write with. Even if you think you'll remember everything you're told, folks, it's unlikely, and it makes you look unprepared. Look, if you want to explain a point, you may want to draw a diagram. You'll need a pen and a paper to do that. Don't take your scruffy legal pad and your chewed Bic pen. Appearances matter. Take a new pen and a clean book from the stationery cupboard if you have to. Go get a Moleskine, right? And put your name in the front of it and write a couple of notes on the first page so it doesn't look like you bought a brand new notebook just for this meeting with this person who's not very senior, but much more senior than you.
Yeah. What do you think about, you go in a meeting with your boss's boss, you want to show some leadership, maybe you want to be a manager someday, you're not quite. So what do you think about showing some initiative and leadership by kind of taking charge of the meeting?
Tell your executive the truth and the truth will set you free. I just read. In fact, I think I wrote something recently which said, even the Wall Street Journal gives bad interviewing advice. And it was a whole article about how to take back control of the interview from the interviewer.
Yeah.
I know there are interviewers like that, but I'm sorry, folks, that just is not done in polite society. Whatever happens during this meeting with your boss's boss or your boss's boss's boss or even higher than that, this is the executive's meeting. It is not your place to direct the meeting. The fact that you have something you really want to get across doesn't mean you get to play conversational ninja and figure out how to turn the conversation under what you really want to talk about. That is called boorishness, and no executive likes it. And they're aware that you're doing it, and they might let you go there. Then they might not like what you say. And then they say, strike one, I didn't like what he says. And strike two, he got me there because I let him, and he's clueless enough to believe that I actually didn't have any say in where he was going.
Right. On the other hand, though, they want to hear from you, right? They're not expecting a bunch of sir, no sir type of
They don't want one-word answers. And frankly, if you're fully prepared, that shouldn't be a problem. If you find yourself giving yes or no answers, folks, it's because you're not prepared, and I'm sorry we couldn't help you. They expect answers, and guess what? Some of your answers are going to be wrong. Some of them, you're going to disagree with them. But as we say all the time when it comes to interviewing, we don't want to hear what you want to tell us first. If we ask you a question, we expect our answer first. If you have a 3.0 GPA, in the U.S., that's a B average throughout your college years, and let's say we really want a 3.2, which is higher, right? So a 3.0 wouldn't go over well. And you say, well, unfortunately, I ask you, what's your GPA? And you say, well, unfortunately, I had to work hard through school because I lost my scholarship, got hurt. And then my folks were sick. So I had to go home for a semester, made it hard to go back. And so unfortunately, I only got a 3.0 GPA. You will get, on a scale of 1 to 10, about a 2 or a 3 for that answer. If, on the other hand, the answer is, my GPA was 3.0. I regret I didn't do more. I had to pay my way through school and I had to work. And unfortunately, my folks got sick my junior year. You'll get a 3.5 for that answer. Why? Because it's the answer we asked for, followed by a rational discursion about what happened. So we expect you to be prepared. We expect you to answer. Not all your answers are going to be the things we want to hear. But the last thing we want is for you to know that the answer you're prepared to give is not what we want to hear. And then for you to dance around what is the truthful and prepared answer.
Right.
This is not about total agreement. It's about being a professional.
Okay. But let's talk about one exception, though, because I hate for somebody to listen to what you just said and then fall into this trap, which is if an executive asks you a question, which you feel forces you to say something negative about your current boss or your team you're on, or your customers, or anything like that, this is the one point where you don't say anything.
Right, yeah.
I am telling you, folks, this is not the time to throw your boss or your team or anybody else under the bus. You may think you're that smart and you can get away with it. It doesn't work. So say something like, I'm not really involved in that, or I don't know any of the details, right? Those are some good avoidance.
Let's help them a little bit more. Let's go even further and say your boss's boss says, well, actually, I'm sorry you work for Matt because I know he's got a temper, right? That's a really specific negative attack. And folks, whether your boss has a temper or not is not the point of that statement. Okay. It is how professionally you can handle it. And one way to do that would be to say something like, well, I wouldn't, even if it were my place, I wouldn't care to comment. Or something like, I can't imagine that's true. Even if that were true, I wouldn't say something out of professional respect. Or it's been my experience that we're pretty effective. Something along those lines that essentially avoids the conversation, the comment entirely. Or literally, as I did once, just if the comment is something like, well, you know, Max got a bit of a temper, you just sit. Right? Now, if they say, do you think Mac has a temper? Then don't say no if, in fact, Mac does. Okay? Say, well, I really wouldn't care to comment. Right? And there are times I have friends who are interested in politics and are still in politics. And they say, you know, it's funny. Everybody gives my politician a hard time because he or she doesn't answer the question put to them. Well, unfortunately, there's an old saying that you're entitled to a truthful answer to any question to which you're entitled an answer. In other words, if the question isn't appropriate enough to deserve an answer, you don't have to answer truthfully. And because we're not truthful, because we don't want to be not truthful, we avoid the answer. We avoid the question. And that's an appropriate professional. And if you might pardon me saying so, the ladylike or gentlemanly thing to do. And they might very well do it. If they say, hey, Project X is tanking, say, I'm sorry, I wish I could converse about that, but I can't, don't know the details. If, in fact, you do know some of them, just say, I'm sorry, I don't know the details, and I can't comment.
Yeah. Okay, and given everything we've said, it is, frankly, it's possible you may make a mistake, and that's why we just suggest you let it go.
Yeah, look, this is a regular piece of guidance from Career Tools. I'm sure Wendy has stories from her career. You know, she and I do a lot of the thinking about Career Tools, and obviously Mike does too. And Wendy and I are slightly less gifted in our careers than Mike because Wendy and I have both been fired. But look, folks, spending time after the meeting fretting about every word you said or trying to think of clever answers. Oh, because George Will once said of Bill Buckley that people used to complain about Bill Buckley because he won arguments simply because, only because, he was more clever than them, meaning that after the conversation, they finally came up with something clever in a response to what he said. They could just not give voice to their razor-like thoughts during the course of the conversation. The fact is, we all feel that way when we're uncertain of the rules. We don't have a lot of power. The outcome is not designed to be obvious to us. It's okay to feel like, there was a better answer. But while it's okay, if you spend long enough thinking about it, you will come up with very clever answers after the fact, and it'll only make you feel more miserable about things. Yeah. Don't do that.
I was in a meeting with my boss's 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 boss, and after a 45-minute meeting, he asked everybody in the room what he could do for them, and I was the last person to answer. And everybody else had said, hey, John, you're doing great. We're getting all the support we need. Thank you very much. Everybody else was smart except me. When he came to me, I said, believe it or not, you can stop wasting our time with these 45-minute meetings that have no purpose so I can get some real work done. Okay, folks, I said it.
Okay, so let me just change my story. Apparently, Mike has been fired at one point before. Or he worked for somebody who didn't have any... I don't know.
And I survived. I got in a lot of trouble that day. There's no doubt about it.
Nothing so exhilarating as being shot at and missed, apparently.
And ultimately, this boss's boss's boss ultimately ended up being a mentor of mine. So it turned out okay later on. But you know, for the next week, I had an uncomfortable life. But it's not the end of your career. You can make mistakes. And nobody listening to this show is as dumb as I was and would say such a thing. So whatever you do, you're going to be just fine. Let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, look, most executives, frankly, are better than other people at making people feel relaxed and conversational. But sometimes some executives aren't. You know, Wendy used to recruit for a senior director who, when he was finished with the conversation, would stand up and walk to the door. Often when Wendy was still mid-sentence, she's told me this before, right? All she could do in that situation was pick up her stuff, thank him for his time, and laugh with her friends afterwards that the guy was socially clueless, but professionally had the power, and he was done with her, and it made no sense to keep talking and assert herself when, in fact, she had no power to assert herself. Look, sure, there's a place for reviewing your performance, deciding what went well, what you could have done better. It's a simple hot wash on your own. It takes 2 minutes. Make a note in whatever tracking mechanism you have for improving your performance in the future, and let's hope you have one, and then just let it go. You can't change the past. There's no point in trying. And that's it. So, 4 things. Get more information, and there is more information out there, whether it be your peers or your boss or your boss's peers or other people who work for this person or the admin of the executive. Spend some time preparing for those questions you know you're going to get and for those questions that you know tend to come up based on some of your research. Put your best foot forward, dress well, be prepared, and so on. And then, folks, breathe in, breathe out, move on, as Jimmy Buffett said. Look, senior executives' impressions of you will make a difference in your career. We know some of you don't like that. But it's a fundamental principle. It's the equivalent of gravity. It's always on and not to be negotiated with. Okay. Remember, you will have and use such authority, the authority that they're using now, when you're at their level. You'll want to be able to evaluate people and you'll want to be able to do it in a way that makes sense to you. So for now, learn a little politics. Plan ahead, get to know something about the person whom you're meeting. Do your best to make the best first impression you can make. And frankly, others won't. And as we've said a million times before, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed person is king or queen, and that helps you. And that's why we're here, to help you.
Awesome. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
Yeah, we'll see you.
See ya.
Thanks, everyone. That's it. We'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.